Okay, so I'll begin by telling a little story. It's a true story. It relates to a book. This book. It's number one on your sheet, on your handout. Notes from the End of History, a memoir of the left in Wales by Philip Bounds. It was published in 2013, and the year before that, its author, who lived in Swansea, attended a meeting of the Swansea branch of the Socialist Party that I was at. Now, I'd had some contact with Philip before, so I sort of knew him. And after the meeting, a group of us convened to the local pub. And in the course of conversation, he mentioned he'd just finished writing a book in which the Socialist Party was mentioned. Now, I knew Philip was a good writer, very good writer, in fact. He'd worked in a university, but now he seemed to be making his living doing journalism and writing history. His partner, who was also there, suggested to him that he let me read the typescript of his book, as I'd be likely to find it interesting. He agreed, and the next morning it came to me as an email attachment. I started reading it, and then I didn't stop till I'd read the whole thing, 160-odd pages. It was, and still is, one hell of a good read. The Socialist Standard carried a review of it when it came out in 2014, and the reviewer, and that wasn't me, also recognised this when he wrote, "It is exceptionally well written, and the prose flows beautifully." And he really did have a wonderful turn of phrase. But why am I talking about this here? Well, I am because chapter 3 of Philip Bounds' book is entitled A Squatter in the House of Marx. And it's about the SPGB. It's about how the start of his political journey was attending Socialist Party meetings as a teenager in the early 1980s. As it happens, this didn't lead to his joining the party, but rather to his joining various other organisations, left-wing ones. But I won't go into that here. But rather, I'll come back to the chapter of his book where he refers to the party, that chapter called A Squatter in the House of Marx, he refers to the party as the House of Marx. It's a brilliantly written chapter, and I'd still strongly recommend it to anyone to read. Its constant refrain, as the title suggests, is that the party is the true heir of Marx. That is to say, its members sort of live and breathe Marx. Now, he tells us that the speaker at the first of the party meetings he attended had as his theme anarchism. And the speaker said he was going to approach it from a Marxist perspective. Elsewhere in the chapter, Philip Bounds refers to the SPGB, and you'll find this under number one on your handout, as the oldest Marxist organisation in Britain, which I think fair to say it is, and also the most lovable of all the Marxist sects in Britain. I sincerely hope we're not, but anyway, that's how he referred to us. He writes that as Marxists we are, and again, it's on your handout, this, a wonderful prophylactic against all kinds of ultra-leftist nonsense. Good writer, as I said. And his summary of that first meeting he attended reads as follows. He wrote, "I understood about a third of it, but in my heart I embraced it all. It was," he wrote, "the empire of theory. And it was also his first exposure to the Marxist passion play, which had acted on my nervous system like manna from heaven." I told you about his turn of phrase. Now, Philip was a bit of an exception. He was a kind of left-wing political nerd. And for him, the left also embraced the Socialist Party. He'd started to develop an interest in Marx and Marxist theory at an early age, and this had fed into his view of the world and politics. Of course, not everyone who comes into contact with the Socialist Party has this kind of background or interest. But is it the case for the non-nerds when they first encounter the party, that what they hear, among other things, of course, is a lot of Marx. Is that the case? I must say that I heard a lot of Marx when I first came into contact with the party in the 1970s, and Philip Bounds seems to have done so in the 80s. But if I and other, or another Philip Bounds, were to encounter the party for the first time now, would that still be the case? I say another Philip Bounds, by the way, because sadly he's no longer with us. He died of cancer in 2020, so still very young. Well, in my perception, at the average party gathering these days, not the present one for obvious reasons, but at the average party gathering, there's a pretty good chance you won't hear Marx or Marxism mentioned very much at all. Take, for example, the Friday night public meetings on Zoom that the party holds. I usually attend them, and very rarely indeed is there specific reference to Marx or Marxism, unless, of course, something about Marx happens to be the specific topic. I know the party has got a Marx study group, which meets online, but with pretty small numbers of well-seasoned members, I think. You know, it doesn't sort of touch the vast majority. What about the written word? Well, I've carried out a little experiment. I combed through three consecutive editions of the Socialist Standard from the first 3 months of this year, looking for references to Marx and Marxism. I did the same thing with three standards from the same months in 1975, so 50 years ago, and the same for standards from the same 3 months 50 years before that, so 1925, so 100 years ago. What did I find? Well, actually, not quite what I expected. In the 1925 standards, which if you've got a bound volume, they appear like this. In the 1925 Socialist Standards, Marx and Marxism was mentioned 13 times in those three editions. Fewer than I expected, to be honest. I expected more than that. Okay. Then in 1975, there were 20 mentions, so actually more than 50 years before. So again, not really what I expected. But in the first three editions this year, January, February, March, here we are, in the first three editions this year, 2025, apart from an article which was an AI experiment and so written by no one in particular, there were only three mentions altogether of Marx or Marxism. Now, as surveys go, I know this is hopelessly unscientific. I know that. But nevertheless, you know, if it's of any consequence at all, it does seem to point to the party being less focused on Marx and Marxism now than it had been in the past, whether 50 years ago or 100 years ago. And in fact, looking closely at those 1925 Socialist Standards, even if the direct references to Marx and Marxism were not overwhelming, as I thought they might be, those editions did contain a significant number of what might be called theoretical articles on Marxist on Marx, even without Marx necessarily being mentioned explicitly. Articles on theory. And some examples of this under number two of your handout, a brief sketch of the materialist conception of history, socialism and the Third International, the class struggle, its economic origins and mental results, the economics of social amusement, is Marx's theory of value unsound. I'm not convinced you'd find many of such articles in the standards that are published today. There's also, by the way, in one of these standards from 1925, an advert for a public debate at Leighton Town Hall on, and the title is Marx's theory of value unsound? Don't think many branches would hold meetings these days on that topic somehow. Is Marx's theory of value unsound? And as a bit of an aside, in editions from later that year, so still 1925, There are little adverts for lifelike portraits of Marx and Engels. And I've written it down here what it says. Handsome cabinet photographs, suitable for framing. Price 1 and 6 a pair. Postage 3 pence extra. To be had from SPGB, 17 Mount Pleasant, London, WC1. The 1975 standards were nothing like as theoretically intense as this anyway, but they nevertheless did contain a series entitled 4 Pages of Socialist Theory, with subjects like banks and wealth, syndicalism and rent, rates and taxes. So what about the standards from the beginning of 2025? Well, apart from an article entitled Will Capitalism Implode?, there's not a lot else that can strictly be called theoretical. What there is, which was far less the case in 1925 and 1975, there is much more topical material, articles about what's happening now and how that relates to socialism and the socialist case. Above all, there are very few references indeed to the party as an organisation with a view of the world and a prescription for change, which refers specifically to Marx, though, of course, our ideas do remain substantially rooted in Marxist ideas. So is it a good idea to neglect explicit Marx, so to speak, which is what we seem to be doing at the moment, or at least, as it were, to leave him in the background? Because after all, Marx and Marxism haven't stopped being popular, particularly in academia, in what you might call the intellectual world. There's no doubt about that. So one or two examples of that. Where Marx and Marxism are still widely studied and published, discussed and published in the intellectual world, more or less everywhere. Academics vie to publish books on Marx and Marxism and to be involved in journals and other publications that seek to analyse and reanalyse Marx's writings. Some just theorise about the theory. Others try to suggest ways it can be applied to current circumstances. So much so that it can be said there's a widespread academic Marx industry, especially in European countries like Italy, Germany and France, but also in North America and in parts of the wider world too, Japan, for example. There's slightly less of this in the UK, but it's still definitely very much present. And some of you may remember that in a public vote organised by the BBC in 2005 for greatest ever philosopher, Marx came out top by some distance. And before that, in the year 2000, the New Yorker magazine named Marx as the most important thinker of the coming century. What else? Well, the loose grouping of people in this country called Labour Left run regular online talk and discussion sessions in conjunction with the Communist Club. I've attended a couple of them myself. The overall title they use is Why Marx? Examples of the topics they've covered, and it's on your sheet, on your handout here, item three. Examples of the topics they've covered or are currently covering are Marx's programme for the Parti Ouvrier, a minimum maximum programme, ABC of Marxist revolutionary theory, forging Marxist unity, did Marxism fail? It's also become common to associate Marx with ideas about environmental breakdown and ecology. The movement linked to this is often known as eco-socialism or eco-Marxism sometimes. In these discussions, Marx is deemed to have observed the link between environmental damage and capitalism, describing it as, and I've written that down as well in your sheet number 4, the metabolic rift. And this has given rise to a significant number of books, publications and organisations with this as their central idea. I'll say a little bit about this because it's very much to the fore at the moment. As far back as 1996, David Pepper linked Marxism to ecology in his book Socialism, From Deep Ecology to Social Justice. This was the book very early in this discussion, 1996. But the real spread of ecological arguments associated with Marx probably dates to around 2000 with John Bellamy Foster's book entitled Marx's Ecology. And again, it's listed on your sheet there. And there are more recent examples to be found, for example, in the work of Ian Angus, particularly with his 2016 book, number 7 on your handout, Facing the Anthropocene, Fossil Capitalism and the Crisis of the Earth System. And very recently indeed, in 2024, with Stale Holgersson's book, Against the Crisis, Economy and Ecology in a Burning World. And in a piece entitled 10 Things I Wanted to Say About Eco-Socialism, Holgersson states, again, it's number 8 on your sheet, we should continue to read Karl Marx for many reasons. His work remains the best starting point for understanding the roots of climate change. Probably the most ambitious of attempts to put eco-socialism in the forefront of Marx's ideas is to be found in the proponents of so-called degrowth socialism, or degrowth communism, as it's sometimes called. A good example of this is the Japanese writer Kohei Saito, number 9 on your sheet, who in writings such as Marx in the Anthropocene, Towards the Idea of Degrowth Communism, argues that eco-socialism was the position of the mature Marx. Another striking example of what might be called degrowth Marxism is a book which was recently reviewed in the Standard called Half-Earth Socialism, A Plan to Save the Future from Extinction, Climate Change and Pandemics, number 10 there, by Troy Vertese and Drew Pendergrass, which even attempts to picture, to portray a day-to-day outline of what a Marxist eco-socialist society would be like. Finally, in this connection, I myself received the regular online newsletter of an Italian organization called Anthropocene, where the aims and analysis are often openly referenced to what they see as Marx's insights into this area. They often carry translations of articles from American and British journals, such as The Ecologist, Climate and Capitalism, and Monthly Review, with a special liking for the American ecology gurus I've just mentioned, John Bellamy Foster and Ian Angus. Website has also actually translated into Italian and published some articles and reviews from the Socialist Standard. I should add that over the years, the Socialist Party has had its own rather different take on ecology and the environment. And in addition to articles that have appeared in the Standard, it produced a pamphlet as early as 1990 entitled Ecology and Socialism, which was then updated in 2015. But again, with no reference in either of these to Marx or Marxist theory. Now, apart from eco-socialism, or as it's sometimes called, eco-Marxism, what other things associated with Marx do we find in the academic world, the intellectual world, which I mentioned? Well, just a small number of examples. There's the new translation of Capital by Paul Reiter, published by Princeton University Press, 944 pages long, which is set to capture all the nuances that previous translators didn't. That's number 12 there. And this itself has spawned a literature analysing and evaluating it. There's also been a new translation of Marx's Critique of the Gotha Programme, containing a new evaluation of it by the American scholar Peter Hudis. That's number 13. A review of the 2024 book by the French scholar, this is number 14, Frédéric Monferrand, entitled The Nature of Capital, Politics and Ontology, I was going to say Oncology, but it's Ontology in the Young Marx, tells us that in proposing a critical interpretation, and it's on your sheet there, in proposing a critical interpretation of Karl Marx's economic and philosophical manuscripts, the author allows us to grasp that the social does not refer primarily to the employment of symbols, but to practices that engage in the bodies of workers and transform their surrounding environments. Hence the ontological significance of the book's argument, which is laid out in the introduction, Capitalism, Naturalism, Ontology. Work that one out, similar to the kind of thing that Keith mentioned yesterday. This is the kind of thing that's been discussed by academics. There are also journals devoted to Marx studies. There's one called Rethinking Marxism, a journal of economics, culture and society, number 15, which has recently been advertising the Stephen A. Resnick Graduate Student Essay Prize for 2025. And this tells us that Stephen Resnick, helped to pioneer an anti-essentialist approach to Marx in economics and social analysis with various works. And the announcement goes on, and it's on your sheet, number 15. We seek essays that explore the complex intersection of class with economic, political, psychological, and other social processes, or with the intellectual, social, and political conditions that shape Marxian interventions and analyses. Again, I'm glad I won't be having a go at that. Finally, New York University is advertising a course by Professor Emma Heaney running in spring 2026 and called Marxism Beyond Marx. I won't read you the full blurb, but it begins by saying this course studies Marxism through the, again, it's number 16, this, through the intellectual traditions of people of color, people from colonized and formerly colonized places, feminists, and queer and trans people. Okay. And there's piles of stuff online as well. At what might be called the top level, for example, there's the Marx and Philosophy Review of Books. Somewhat further down the linguistic food chain, I recently came across an online article on the website of an organization that calls itself the Red Squad, R-E-D, capitals, standing for the Revolutionary Education and Defense Squad. This article was entitled "The Problem Is Not the Rich: A Marxist Analysis." It's actually very good at putting over the same case as we do on class. It says things like, if you don't own and control the land, factories, machines, infrastructure, and systems that society runs on, and you have to sell your time and energy just to survive, you are working class, no matter how nice your paycheck is. You could be an engineer, a nurse, a tech worker, a teacher, a tradesperson, or a barista. You might make 20K or 200K. That's dollars. If you depend on a wage to live, you're in the same class boat as everyone else who does. And simply taxing or redistributing wealth without abolishing capitalist property relations doesn't change the system. It just shuffles the loot. Unfortunately, however, if we look at the Red Squad site in more detail, we discover that they are in fact a group who refer to themselves as Marxist-Leninist and praise Mao as well. Oh, dear. But in fact, they're only one of a range of many different Marxisms on the web. Another American site called the Midwestern Marx Institute, number 19 there, describes itself as a Marxist-Leninist think tank, and it has one of its concerns to praise and promote the state capitalist system in China. And it endorses that regime's claim to be socialist or Marxist with Chinese characteristics. The American Socialist Equality Party's World Socialist Party website, which some of you may know, that's not to be confused with our own World Socialism side. So the World Socialist Party of the Socialist Equality Party in America churns out masses of stuff on a daily basis, very professionally as well, and although they claim to be the International Committee of the Fourth International and to be armed with a socialist political perspective rooted in the scientific foundations of Marxism, number 20 there, they are in fact, they're a hardline Trotskyist outfit. And all this is without talking about the small organisations in this country that most of us probably know, which claim to be Marxist but are usually Trotskyist and have their own websites and publications. Philip Bounds, who I mentioned earlier, but he's there again, number 21 on your handout, has a nice amusing line on this when he wrote in his inimitable style, "Everyone knows that Marxist organisations tend to multiply like amoeba, and Marxists have an enormous talent for littering the political market with a wide choice of goods." So what's to be drawn from what we've seen so far? Well, largely that Marx and Marxism are still popular, perhaps more popular than ever, at least in what I've referred to as the intellectual or academic world. But does this involve a very small number of people? Yes, it does, in fact. Those who are prepared to spend time reading what an even smaller number of people are writing in what will appear to most people to be obscure books or other publications or website. And above all, from our point of view, a lot of the stuff that this academic Marxism, so to speak, puts across doesn't help us either, because it's either help us, I mean, in the Socialist Party, because either it's pretty peripheral to our main message or because sometimes it's, frankly, contrary to it. So, for example, there's the stuff, and there's a lot of it, that purports to take its inspiration from Marx, but in reality promotes Leninism or Trotskyism or even Stalinism or regimes like the Chinese one. So these are things that are obviously inimical both to our view of socialism and to our interpretation of Marx. There is sometimes analysis of capitalism, which we might accept as being Marxist, but which then, in terms of prescription, ends up promising reformism and spreading the illusion that the system that Marx wanted to see the end of can somehow be fixed within the framework of capitalism. Prime example of this, and one fresh in my own mind, is the book I reviewed myself for this month's Socialist Standard. It's by the writer Ash Sarkar, and it's called Minority Rule. This book here, Minority Rule, and I wrote the following about it, and that's number 22 on your sheet. I'll read it out quickly. "The author calls herself a Marxist, but her class analysis based on relationship to the means of production is consonant with Marxism. But her proposed solution for removing the minority class's stranglehold over society strays far from this. She presents herself rather as a left Labourite, critical of Keir Starmer's current Labour government and its way of running capitalism, but favourable to Jeremy Corbyn's kind of Labourism, which, after the result of the 2017 general election, she tells us, she thought might herald a new era of Labour coming to power and bringing in massive pro-worker reforms. But if she is a Marxist, she should know that reforms any government can bring in are limited by the needs of capitalism and anyway are not capable of seriously redistributing wealth and bringing about economic equality." This is what the followers of Corbyn would have found if he'd come to power. So that's the section of the review in this month's Socialist Standard. Unfortunately, none of the stuff I've been referring to, whether the analysis is acceptable, partly acceptable, or not acceptable at all, or whether it comes from the Socialist Party or elsewhere, is likely to have much of an impact on the majority movement needed to bring the socialist vision into being. In fact, the majority of workers, certainly at present, when they think about Marx or Marxism, if they think about Marx or Marxism, are much more likely to see it as something quite different from the way we do. They are most likely to see it as simply left-wing politics or an agenda that is anti-patriotic or, as they say these days, woke. And in those quarters, Marxism tends to get used as a kind of swear word, a smear term among those who've never read a word of Marx and know nothing at all of his ideas. And they are the vast majority. So, for example, Donald Trump has called the Democrat Party Marxist, and the apotheosis of Marxism is said to be the Black Lives Matter movement, the majority of whose activists, again, we can be sure, know little or nothing of Marx. During 2021, at the time of the COVID crisis, some of you may be aware of this kind of thing, when professional football matches began to be held again, but behind closed doors, without spectators present, groups of fans, some of them masked, demonstrated outside stadiums with placards claiming that the football authorities had gone Marxist by pandering to football players taking the knee. That was Marxism. And of course, the internet pullulates with anti-Marxist expression, largely from those who've no idea whatever about Marx's writings and are just mouthing rhetoric which they've heard. And even those who do have some idea tend to readily identify Marxism with oppressive state capitalist regimes and organisations, past and present. We're talking here, of course, about the Soviet Union, China, what happened in Cambodia in the late 70s under the Khmer Rouge, and what happens today in countries like Cuba, Venezuela, Vietnam, places which are commonly labelled Marxist or socialist, but of course bear no relation to either. The Socialist Party's publications, meetings and publicity have exposed this time and time again. Just have a read of the cuttings on the wall there from the 1930s onwards. They've exposed this as sham Marxism or sham socialism, and we never stop. And in fact, one of this weekend's speakers, who's sitting in front of me, Keith Graham, in 1992, published a book, here we are, entitled Karl Marx, Our Contemporary, Social Theory in a Post-Leninist World. That's number 24 on your handout. In this, Keith presents the whole of the socialist case, as one reviewer put it, clearly and crisply, part of which was to make it absolutely clear that regimes like post-Tsarist Russia could be nothing other than a state capitalist, bearing no reasonable relation to Marx's outlook. And to be fair, others not connected to the Socialist Party have said similar things. A good example is a recent book by Steve Paxton entitled Unlearning Marx, Why the Soviet Failure Was a Triumph for Marx. That's also listed on your sheet. Number 23. Yet this doesn't stop these regimes, which I mentioned, from being used by some writers as evidence that Marxism has been tried and found wanting. One example of this is the Princeton University Press's book from 2020 by Daniel Shiro, entitled You Say You Want a Revolution? Radical Idealism and Its Tragic Consequences, number 25, and it states what's there in the note. The Russian, Chinese and other successful communist revolutions were inspired by Marxism and killed tens of millions in order to achieve an impossible egalitarian ideal. Another example, coming from somewhere a little bit different, is a book of essays published in 2021 with the title The Psychology of Populism. Is that on the sheet somewhere? Number 26, isn't it? Yeah. James Forgas and William Crane, The Psychology of Populism, The Tribal Challenge to Liberal Democracy. And it is, the authors identify Marxism with what they call left-wing populism, describing it as featuring the same degree of authoritarianism, dogmatism and intolerance as found in right-wing totalitarian movements. So clearly, it's not just the poorly informed or the non-academic world that put out blatantly false notions. For all these reasons, Marxism has become a difficult word for socialism, for socialists to use, maybe even more difficult than the word socialism itself. And that's one of the reasons why some of those seeking to put across the same idea as we do of a moneyless, wageless, frontierless, leaderless society of the kind to be drawn from the writings of Marx avoid mention of Marx and sometimes even of socialism. Just a couple of examples of that. If you look on your sheet at number 27, in 2023, a young American called Jamshid David brought out a short publication called Socialism for Young Folks and Everyone Else. And you'll see from the title that it didn't eschew the word of the use of the S word, but its mentions of Marx are virtually non-existent. At the same time, it comes extremely close to the Socialist Party's critique of current society and proposals for changing it. It begins by defining socialism as an economic system where the means of production, how goods are made, and this is on your sheet under number 27, the means of production, how goods are made, and distribution, how goods get into the hands of those who need them, are socially owned in common, and where distribution is not through markets, but by free access. And having established what socialism is, it then proceeds to explain and denounce what it is not. It's not nationalization or state ownership or control, since that's simply state capitalism, where government managers take the place of the regular capitalist bosses, and wage labor, markets, and money still exist, and there is no free access to needed goods and services. And then it states an adamant no to the dictatorships, places like China, Cuba, Vietnam, etc. There are a few more quotes there which are obviously relevant to what he's trying to say. I'll jump to the last one, which says a world community is now possible and is necessary for the further development of humanity. So that's one example. A second example of Marxism relatively unmentioned is a book from 2022 Where Marxism is relatively goes without mention is a book from 2022 entitled Beyond Money, A Post-Capitalist Strategy by the Australian social commentator Anitra Nelson. That's number 28 on your handout. In a previous book called Life Without Money, Building Fair and Sustainable Economies from 2011, Nelson had described what she wanted as a moneyless, marketless, wageless, classless, and stateless society that also aims to satisfy everyone's basic needs while power and resources are shared in just and equal ways. In the later book, which I haven't got a copy of with me, Beyond Money, that's number 28. In Beyond Money, she reiterates and amplifies this, characterizing money as the driver of political power, environmental destruction, and social inequality, and argues that it has to be abolished rather than repurposed to achieve a post-capitalist future. So she also makes a powerful case while largely avoiding mention of Marx or Marxism. Lastly, an example of an entirely Marx-less book on the same topic, and this one from France. And it's entitled, in English translation, Description of the World of Tomorrow, a World Without Money or Barter or Exchange, a Civilization of Free Access. And it's by Jean-François Aupetit-Gendre and Marc Chinal. It's two long essays, in fact, one by each author, mapping out their own particular take on why the current society, based on commerce, exchange, competition, hierarchy, and production for profit, does not suit human needs, and why it must be urgently superseded by a different kind of society based on mutual cooperation, real democracy, and production for need. I had an email correspondence with one of the authors after a review of their book appeared in the Socialist Standard. In the course of our exchange, he mentioned that they'd not referred to the society they're advocating as socialism, because in France, use of that word, let alone of Marxism, would kindle the wrong associations. So this is sort of recent stuff in print, but there are non-print sources too that are worth mentioning. First of all, something that everyone knows, John Lennon's song, Imagine. Won't sing it, but in a recent article, I saw it referred to as sugar-coated anti-capitalism. Okay, but it's also often hailed as the encapsulation of a true socialist society. And it does depict, unswervingly, I would say melodically, a world where the resources of the earth are shared between its populace, with everyone having enough to eat, living cooperative lives, and no longer being plagued by war, religion, or national divisions. Of course, it gets no shortage of criticism, and some people just don't like John Lennon. Yet, in 1999, in a BBC poll of people's favourite 20th century lyrics, Imagine came out number one. We obviously recognise it as being about socialism, but of course the song doesn't use the term and certainly doesn't mention Marx or Marxism. Like-mindedness is also to be found in a number of widely followed groups on the internet. The Facebook site, called A Group Where We Are All Active Against Capitalism, and that's number 31 on your sheet, describes itself in the following way. This group exists to support the abolition of the power of capital through the transformation of the means of production from private to social ownership. This will only be achieved by the working class emancipating ourselves worldwide. Similar sentiments are frequently expressed on the site called Capitalism or Socialism, Discussion and Debate, but only infrequently on such sites is there mention of Marx or Marxism. Prime example is the self-descriptive American site called Moneyless Society, which is said to have over 20,000 followers. In communication I had with its founder, Matthew Holton, in 2022, I suggested I might provide him with a few comments of endorsement. Sorry, he suggested I might provide him with a few comments of endorsement for the back cover of the print version of the book he was about to publish, called Moneyless Society, The Next Economic Evolution. That's number 32 on your sheet. I did that, he replied as follows. We love your endorsement that's on the book and the feedback you've given about it as well. He goes on, we've had a few people give us some feedback regarding the word socialist being on the back cover of the book, and it's turning some people off from giving it to some other people they know due to the stigma associated with the term in the US. So just imagine if instead of socialism I'd use Marxism. What am I saying with all this? Am I saying that we need to stop using the word socialism or Marxism to describe our case and cease to make reference to Marx, and somehow that way our idea will spread more quickly? No, of course I'm not saying that. But what's happened is that though historically our case and our way of articulating it derived from Marx, other people seem to be managing to put a similar case without mentioning it, or at least without dwelling on Marx, and sometimes without even referring to it as socialism. This being the case, my question is, isn't it better not to thrust Marx on those listening to us? Actually, that little non-scientific survey of the Socialist Standard over the last 100 years suggests that that's the direction we've moved in anyway. And perhaps we shouldn't even insist that what we're arguing has got to be called socialism, if that seems to deter people. But of course, we do need to call it something. And one of the advantages of calling it socialism, contrary to what Paddy said earlier, actually, one of the advantages of calling it socialism is that it gives us the chance to differentiate our socialism from other people's. Okay, there's a for and against there. Part of the blurb for this talk, if you read it, was as follows. It's been said that when socialism is established, it will be without the majority of the people who establish it knowing much, if anything, about Marx. That's number 33 on your handout there. And that's something I actually first heard said back in the 1970s and by someone who was a party member and an avowed and seasoned Marxist. So the idea was present among some in the party even then, and gradually the party's moved in that direction in the way it presents the socialist case, even if our own consciousness of doing that may have been more implicit than explicit. But to be clear then, and I'm sort of concluding now, this isn't an argument that says that the Socialist Party should hold back from talking about the origins of the socialist idea in Marx's writings and from claiming these as a fundamental and inextricable part of our case for socialism. Just that we should do this as and when suitable occasions arise and not as a matter of course. We shouldn't therefore eschew Marx or Marxian theory, since some people will be interested in it. And the Socialist Party still does produce literature periodically on Marx and Marxism, as in this pamphlet, which was produced in, I think, 2015, Some Aspects of Marxian Economics. But what I'm saying is that it probably doesn't benefit the effective promotion of the socialist idea for us to lead with this. Instead, we should rather be focusing on or fostering, as clearly as possible, an understanding of how capitalism operates and why and how socialism should replace it. And we should do this starting from an explanation of what's happening in the contemporary world. Finally, I mentioned a moment ago the party member of some 50 years ago who was a seasoned Marxist but thought that when socialism came about, it would be without the majority of workers knowing much or anything about Marx. And I'll finish by quoting again from another very well-versed party member who expressed something very similar just recently when he wrote the following, and that's the last number on your handout, number 35. We should not be seen to be standing on the sidelines and lecturing. In any event, it is not our view that workers need to have studied piles of books to become a socialist. All someone needs to do is, of course, understand what socialism is and want it, and that capitalism cannot be reformed so as to work in the interests of the workers, which is something people could work out for themselves through talking to others, and reading a few pamphlets might help someone to come to this conclusion. No need to understand the materialist conception of history or the labour theory of value unless you want to. So do we as socialists need Marx? Well, there is an undeniable argument that Marx was essential to the development of our ideas, but what I'd say is that now these ideas can fly free. Thank you.